Two sisters, Lena Erickson Justice and May Erickson Lamar, recall picking and selling huckleberries, staying at home during the long winters at Hog Meadows and the Wells family at Deary. They both flunkied at logging camps, and they described their duties and some of their experiences. Lena's husband, Albert, was a cook, and she remembers his cooking and why he quit.
During World War I, we did.
Where would you sell them?
There would be other people that would come in from outside to pick huckleberries also, and they would see us with our berries, and they liked them awfully well, so they would buy what we had picked that day.
We didn't even get home with them.
So we'd go home with empty pails, which was fine by us.
A couple of dollars in our pocket.
Because that meant a lot. There again, it helped provide the school clothes and books and things that we needed for school in those days.
Wasn't it a dollar a gallon we got for them then?
During World War I.
Seemed like one time we got $3.
We got two. Yeah, we got $3 a gallon during...
During the first... The world.
$2 a gallon during World War I.
$2, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we thought it was a lot.
It was quite a bit in those days. Mm-hmm. But ordinarily they would sell for a dollar a gallon, so everything else went up in price. So.
And we're still selling berries.
Yes.
We're getting $5 a gallon now, we're getting rich.
Doesn't buy what it bought back then, though.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
You can buy much now. Tank of gas. Don't even do that.
No.
The little car even takes more than that.
It certainly does.
The big one takes about 10. But it's
with
fun.
The two of you, were you fairly, did you do a lot of things together?
Quite a bit. I was about 11 then. In 1918 I was 11, see, 19. I was 10 in 1917. And in 1918 we were picking a lot of berries. I was 11 years old. I was a pretty good size girl. I could pick my share, I guess.
You sure could. She still can. She's a better picker than I am, and I've been picking for 65 years. May's been picking for 60 years.
About 60, I guess. 60. And I sold my first huckleberries when I was 9, I think. Sold them to a man that, we three kids were out picking. No, the four of us, the two boys. And Molly and I, call me Molly over here.
Yeah, that's my name.
And so at the end of the time, we had our pails full. I had a half a gallon lard pail. And the other kids had their gallon buckets. So this fellow said, well, I'll just buy your huckleberries from you. So he gave the other kids each a dollar. So here he gave me a dollar for my half a gallon. And Alfred, you know, my brother was here. He said, oh my goodness, he said, that's too much. He said, she only has a half a gallon. Well, he said, she worked just as hard as the rest of you did.
You can go on while I go up and take care of my bread.
So I had my dollar for my half a gallon. I was pretty proud about that. Big silver dollar in those days, not paper money. But that was a big help in bringing in a little extra money when money was so hard to get a hold of in those days.
Would you go out often to pick berries?
Oh yes, we'd pick all during the season when the huckleberry should ripen about in, after the 4th, usually after the 4th of July. And we could pick then up until, about the 1st of August. And people used to come out to the house, even people, our local people, you know, from Beauville. They'd come out there, they'd know we had huckleberries, so they'd come out there and buy them from us. Or sometimes we take them in. Sometimes we take them into our grocery and trade them for groceries. So it worked in a lot of ways that way, to our advantage, because that gives us a chance to pick up a little extra money.
Would you go out every day?
Usually, as a rule, we go every day. Yes, we'd make a regular job of it, except when, during haying, we might have to lay off and help, you know, shock hay that we did out in the field, and the hay would be mowed down. We'd have to put it in shock so they could go along and pick it up on a wagon, on a hay rack. the barn. So we've had to help on that in between times, but as a rule, we'd stay with our berry picking pretty regular. Although not every year we'd have berries, that's another thing, because usually every other year the berry crop would be good.
And you figured every other?
Usually every other year that they would be good. But there would always be somewhere, but nearby, but they don't produce equally good each year. That's the only thing about it. But we enjoyed it. It was kind of hard work, but we always liked it to be out in the woods, making a little extra money.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the Indians used to, they would shake the berry bush.
Yes, they used to cut the bushes, and that I can't understand, because you would think they'd want to preserve things like that more, and I know it would take some time for that bush to grow back. But I've heard of it. I never did see it, but I have seen huge piles of broken huckleberry bushes, and they'd beat them off onto a blanket, and I guess the blanket might be worn or something like that, and then they could shake it a little bit like that, and the leaves and all the debris would stick to the blanket, and the berries would roll off. And the berries, they would also sell their berries, I think, to a large extent. I've heard of them doing that. But I never did see him do it, but I think my sister has. When she comes back down, I think she can tell us somewhat about that, too. So, but I never liked that idea. I'd rather just go and pick them. I wouldn't see much fun in, working on a bunch of broken bushes.
Well, were you able to go to school?
Not very much. In fact, I didn't start school until I was almost 11, but I could read and write fairly well before I attended school. Learned that home. Well, we had a first grade reader, I guess, at home, and I got a little start. I think my brother got me started on that, or mother did, one or the other, but I just naturally liked to read, so I just picked it up. And I didn't get to school then until I was almost 11, but I was promoted to the third grade at the end of that school term. And then being that couldn't read, I guess, and enjoyed it, I was always promoted, so I got through grade school in a hurry that way. I always made two grades a year or more. So I didn't have any problem that way. But I can't imagine a life without reading. That was one of the things I still enjoy doing.
What were you able to, what kind of books were around then that you could read?
Well, I wonder if I can remember. Let's see. I wish I had kept them, but I didn't. But they were, Alice in Wonderland and The Fisherman's Wife. And, oh, goodness, can I even begin to remember back all the things we had? But they were those stories after that fashion. And Three Little Pigs, I guess, that would be in the second grade reader, I guess. I don't know if they would be called McGuffey's reader or not. I suppose they would. I think maybe it would be something in that order. But that would be the type of stories we had to read. And Black Beauty and oh my goodness. And then as we got a little bit further along in the grades, there would be a lot of poems by Longfellow and all those, we'd have to memorize and things like that. That'd be up in the around the sixth and seventh grade when we'd have that.
Were they still having literaries when you were young?
Yes, I think they did, but they used to have that in Helmer. They have to call literary meetings, but I never attended. I was too small then, much too young for that. But I know my brother Alfred would know about that. He's attended some. But I never did go to one of those. But then, too, that was quite a ways away. That'd be usually held at night, and be about 4 miles away, and usually in the winter, when there'd be 4 or 5 foot of snow on the ground. So due to that, a person was more or less isolated in the winter. It'd be pretty hard to get out very much.
Would you just stay at home weeks and
that's
months
about
at
the
time?
Well, that's about all we did. We just stayed home, and the boys kept busy, of course, chopping wood and everything. Of course, they used to sell wood, chop down trees and sell wood by the cord in Bowville and haul that out. And then to go out for the mail once a week, go to, for a while it was at Helmer, then we moved it to Bovell, where the mail came to. So they would have to go there and get the mail, and we had weekly newspapers in those days. Mother would get her Norwegian paper that came from Decorah, Iowa, and that was a weekly paper. And the Spokesman Review, that was a weekly paper. Finally, I think they got up to where it was twice a week, and we just mailed out to subscribers. And we also had a magazine, it was called the Idaho Farmer, that was published here in Spokane, I think, near as I remember. And that would be, seemed like that came once a month. Now, I'd have to ask my sister about it, and that would have stories in it, continued stories, you know. So we always look forward to that because there'd be something interesting to read. But I'll have to ask her about the Idaho Farmer.
Would you read those out loud to each other? Or?
No, usually we'd read it to ourselves, although Mother mother spoke both English and Norwegian, but Norwegian she spoke fluently, of course, and English not so clear. But Mother would read from her paper. There was also stories in her Norwegian paper that she would read out loud to us in Norwegian, which we understood very well. Hmm. So that was another diversion.
Was your father Norwegian? Or?
Yes, he was Norwegian. And
did you learn Norwegian at home? Was that what you spoke
at home?
Well,
it was a strange setup we had on that. I don't know, I'll never be able to explain how. But Mother always talked Norwegian to us at home. So I just grew up with that. But we answered on English. Now I don't know why. It seems strange. I should be able to speak it fluently. But I don't. I can get by and make myself understood. But we could, Mom would always say something in Norwegian to us, and we'd always answer in English, invariably. But Dad spoke Norwegian excellently, of course, as well as English. He spoke that very well. So with Mother, though, it was a little bit more halting with her. She'd get some of her words made. But she could read and write both. Dad, I think, only read Norwegian. I don't think he read English too well. He did Norwegian. But I can't understand how that happened.
So. How did you pick up your English? From other kids in the neighborhood or from your father?
No, we just, I don't know, must have been mostly from Dad. I don't really know, I can't. Because as far back as I can remember, she always talked Norwegian to us and we'd answer in English. So, but there, we didn't have any close neighbors, you know, that had children our own age. I guess my sister did more, but then when I came along, more than 6 years younger than my sister, well, there weren't any kids around my age then. All the other people had moved away, had any youngsters.
And I'd like to ask you, your sister mentioned that you'd seen the Indians pick berries in the woods.
Oh yeah.
You've seen them and break bushes?
Break bushes. I think the squaw, what they call them, the squaws, they sit down and pick the berries, and the men, or was it the vice versa? I remember now.
They'd probably go out and break the bushes.
And the squaws used to have to do all the work anyway, so I imagine they had to break the bushes and bring it to the...
Yeah, it could be. I never did see them do it, but you know, I've seen the bushes, but I think
they'd
you
be
have.
Piled high as this room.
You saw them do it then.
Oh yeah.
Actually. Yeah, I never did because I was a little bit before my time because the Indians didn't come around, well, not quite as much, and I began to diminish somewhat, didn't it, as time went on.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember them coming there and getting water out of this well I was telling you about that was such good spring water, coming up on the horse and they filled their little sacks, canvas sacks with water, drinking water.
Yeah, and Dad had to get after them because they were digging camas in the meadow, you know, it made it so rough when they mowed the hay. And I guess one of them was threatening him, wasn't he, or something?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think that's what Dad said. Because he chased him out of the meadow. That's what they made their bread. Walked over there and my dad came after me and just eating dinner. I can remember how I must have been awful naughty. I was kicking the table. He was grabbing me and I was kicking away and I didn't want to go home. I wanted to eat. But I got it afterwards when I got home. I got a spanking. Remember that. That's before May. I guess I must have been about 4 years old. But that's about all I remember of any unusual things.
Were there people in Bowville that, were you able to ever have, ice cream or candy in Bowville?
No. Well, my dad, whenever he'd go to town, why, they'd always buy a nickel's worth of candy, and you got a pretty big sack of candy for a nickel, you know. He'd come home with candy or maybe some oranges or bananas or something like that. If he could, all depends on how they could afford it, you know, if they had any money left, why he'd. And then we used to go to Deary and done most of the trading, and that was about 8 miles. And of course we'd, whenever he paid up his bill, why, they'd give him quite a bit of home sack of candy, maybe about a pound or a pound and a half, something like that. And of course, we was all hungry for sweets, so that didn't last too long. And when my brother went to school down at Helmer, we used to have a Christmas program down there, and of course I was too small to go at that time, but anyway, I think my dad donated, maybe 2 bits or something like that for a sack of candy and orange and apples and stuff like that we'd get. And we'd come home with that and peanuts. And that would be our treat for Christmas. And maybe we'd have a little tree or something, and we'd have to make our own decoration, not a catalog, and be colored pieces, and we'd paste them together and string them around on the tree. Did you ever do that when you was a kid?
Well, not with a catalog.
No, well, that had the pretty pictures on it, see?
Yeah.
And popcorn, sometimes we'd string popcorn and stuff like that for Christmas. Make it look a little Christmas. But as far as the eats go, we didn't have turkey or anything like that.
Did your parents keep any of the Norwegian customs?
Our mother did have, but we moved so much, it seemed like we got... The only thing I got, which I think would be nice if you'd want it for the museum, is her wedding veil. It's kind of tattered, but... And I have their wedding picture.
I was asking whether they kept customs, Norwegian customs. Any of the, traditions from Norway.
My mother wasn't born in Norway. She was born in the United States. She was born in Illinois. But her mother, dad, and her sisters, her oldest sister, her mother was the baby of the family. And they were from Norway. And I think, if I remember right, that she said something about, I guess a brother next to her must have been, had died when they were on the ship and he was buried in sea. Because he couldn't take the body on, But they went to Illinois, Gilmer County, Illinois, I guess is where it was. Then they moved to Minnesota, which is where she was about, what did she say she was? Baby, I guess. Maybe about a year old or something like that.
Would your parents speak Norwegian to each
other? Oh, yes. Yes, my mother spoke Norwegian all the time. But she could speak English very good. And she wrote Norwegian and English both. read the papers and all that, and the Bible, of course, that was her main thing. And we'd have to be awfully quiet when she read the Bible to us. We'd have to pay attention.
Would that be in Norwegian? She'd read that?
Yeah, she'd read in Norwegian. Yeah, we could speak a little Norwegian. May and I went to Norway, was it 5 years ago? I had a wonderful time. They're trying to find some of our relatives there, but we didn't. Dad, he always talked English to us girls and kids, rather. But Mother had always talked Norwegian because she wanted us to know the Norwegian language. But Dad, and then when they talked, well, then they used the Norwegian language together. But we could understand. I was talking to my brother here not too long ago, and I'd say something in Norwegian, and by golly, you know, he's forgotten. He hasn't been around for, well, since Mother died. And that's been several years ago, 45, 46, I guess, something like that. But when you're around it, it all comes back to you, so you can, you know.
Yeah,
it's quite a thing. I wished I'd have learned to read it and write it, but do that. Of course, there wasn't any Norwegian schools around there. Now, like here in Spokane, their sons in Norway, they have schools for anybody. And she was a midwife, I think. But they came from the south. Boy, was she ever a good cook. Wonderful cook. I'd eaten at her place. I remember the first time I ate there, you know how you kind of feel that you wasn't clean, but she was clean as could be. Very much so.
I've heard, you know, a fair bit about them, but were they well accepted by you?
In Deary? Yes, they were. It was funny, one time the old Joe Wells said, well, you know, he says, I'm the only white man here. He says, they all, the rest of them are Swedes. Kind of cute. And he was black as ace of spades. He was black. She was too. But they were, yes, they were pretty nice people. Accepted them in a way. And later on, the girls, their daughter got married, and they had a couple of children, I think. And the daughter was a very, very smart girl. She was valedictorian there, but we know they didn't, something about it, because she was black, they didn't want to give it to her. But I guess the rest of them kicked about it, so she got it. And I thought that was kind of mean. Yeah, she was
she much older than you? Or she would have been, wouldn't she?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The granddaughter wouldn't have been older than I, because I can remember when she was born, because I went up to see her. I wanted to see what she looks, baby looked like. Kind of cute, on her already back.
My goodness.
That's on East
West. That was the main thing. Get out and earn some money. Because that was during pretty hard times too when we went. What year was it we went down there to?
Let's see, we worked, 1923 we went down to Princeton to work.
23? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Because you got married the next year in 1924, right?
That's right.
So. Well, you'd worked up by Shea Meadows.
Yeah, that's where we first.
And that was 1922 then, mm-hmm. Summer of 1922. Long enough to get some school money.
Yeah, that's 22, and then we went down to Camp One. And then from there to Camp Seven, back to Shea Meadows again.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you work there? I can't remember.
Camp Seven?
Yeah.
Oh, I started Prince, and then in December we were transferred to Camp Seven.
Yeah.
And I worked there till the following August, I think.
Oh.
Then I quit and went back to finish grade school.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Went back to school. Finished that. And, oh, goodness. Well, then I went back to work, I guess the next year I went back to work to Logie Camp. I worked on and off for about, about 7.5 or 8 years for the Potlatch Lumber Company.
You worked for Billy Musht, didn't you,
mm-hmm.
up to Cab?
I was up at headquarters.
Headquarters.
That was in 1928. I was there for a while.
Were they just starting up that logging in that area when you went out there?
No. Camps on Elk River had been running for quite a number of years. But they had built better camps. They'd enlarged a lot, and they called it Camp C headquarters, where it was tie up where the railroad or the logging engines would come in, you know, for the night. They kept them there. That was the base for them, and then they'd go out to the other two or three camps and pick up logs during the day. But the train crew always tied up there at Camp C at night.
That was near Elk River?
Yes. Uh-huh, about 14 miles from Elk River, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Way to Crow Flies, I guess, about 14, 15.
Were you out there then?
We were down at Camp 5, I guess, on Hog Meadows.
Yes.
I think
we were.
Oh, shoot, I
can't. About that time. Then you were transferred up to Camp D to Elk River.
Yeah, I stayed down at the Hog Meadows all alone there, or Betty and I. And I'd bar myself into the shack and put knives up so nobody could get in. I was kind of worried about being by herself. And in the morning, I'd go down and get breakfast in the logging. They had the whole camp there. Then I'd go clear down and start the pump at the pump house.
Oh.
Started that at night, see if it run all right. And then build a fire down there. Kept the fire going so it wouldn't freeze up. It was in the winter time. And then Betty and I go back to her shack and bar ourselves in. I don't know what good it done if anybody wanted to get in. Then from there, they got a place for us up Camp D where Albert was cooking, and they took him up there. So we was there for... Then you came up there later, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I came up there to work later then.
Yeah.
First I went to camp.
That's where she met her. Her husband, first husband.
Camp D. I was there until 1930 then. Been about 2 years up there.
When you worked together, were your jobs any different than each other's? You know, what you did in the camp?
When we worked together, we done the same thing. I mean, wait table and that's down in Princeton. And now we're at Camp 7 also.
Now they served family style, you know, in logging camps. So our job was to keep the dishes filled, vegetables and meats.
What would you have to get up at 4:30 for? What happened at 4:30 in the morning?
Well, you had a lot to do. You had to get your tables. Of course, we had the silverware and the plates on and the cups and all that.
You know, we put those on the night before. But there would be butter to put on the tables and milk and fruit and things for their breakfast, and syrup.
and all their cookies and donuts and
And takes bread. Quite a while. We also had to have bread on the table, and we always sliced the bread be somebody who would want it. Because in addition to that, then they'd have pancakes every morning.
And toast.
And toast.
Hash brown potatoes. Mm-hmm. Bacon. Eggs.
Would they have eggs every morning?
Every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Regular. Scrambled, boiled, fried.
They'd have hot cereal. And we'd have to put milk on for their cereal, so we'd have to dilute canned milk, the way we did it. Put that on, as well as a can of milk, you know, for their coffee cream. And you dilute a certain amount of that milk for their cereal. Oh, and then we always had dry cereal and cornflakes and shredded wheat, maybe, and all bran, I think. We didn't have as many varieties then as we do now. And that always had to be put on the table. So there would be a lot to put up. And then we'd have to fix the table so they could pack their own lunches, get out the bread and the butter for that.
Yeah, quite a while to get those ready.
Be a lot of things to get ready. And breakfast was always served at 6. So then the cooks then would have the hot meal, the hot part of the meal ready, like their pancakes and bacon and eggs. We'd set that on the tables.
It's like the thundering herd. As soon as the doors open, we unlock the door. Here they come. Clumpity clump.
Pounding on it real hard. It would carry too, that sound. And the lumberjack come in, and they'd eat, and they eat in silence in order to get through, you know, in a hurry, because there wasn't any sitting and smoking at the tables and lingering over their coffee. And as soon as they'd be through, they'd leave, get out, and head out for the woods where they'd work.
Did they end up switching to store-bought bread? Or did they
Not when we were in there, or when we were working. They might have did later years. Now, I don't know when before they closed the camps all down. It seemed like they got that. And besides the bacon, Albert was said that was a godsend when they got sliced bacon, you know, they used to.
Oh, yes, they had to slice their own always.
Yeah. Gee, you had to slice up, well, I don't know, 3-4 slabs of bacon, and that take quite a while.
It takes time.
And they fry them in the great big pans. Well, that's that long and about that wide, I guess, and they lay it in layers, you know.
Did your poppy pop down here, pardon me?
No.
Up there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
heat the water there for your coffee.
You mean they bake it in the oven? Is that?
Yeah, they bake it in the oven.
Mm-hmm. Right, bacon was good. That's an excellent way to cook bacon. Wonderful.
They just put it in layers, kind of, you know, kind of thick, and then he takes and fry it out. Same with making scrambled eggs. Put that in the oven too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, big pans of that, and you just keep working them.
And they also used to fry their potatoes, you know, when you slice them instead of the hash browns. I mean, like cutting up your raw potatoes and putting them in the oven. Remember Albert doing that?
Mm-hmm.
They have a great big baking pan, quite deep, about so deep, I guess. Big square pan, you'd have that full of potatoes. You pull it out every once in a while, turn them over so they cook equally around, tender.
Would he have a lot of oil in it? Or?
Quite a bit. They used quite a lot of bacon drippings, I think, to season it.
Yeah,
down.
I think
they made
them
taste good.
How would they cook that many pancakes? And have them warm for the men?
Well, they had big grills. Big as this table, isn't it, May?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I would say it was as long as that. And you get that full of
you ought to see how he had batter, plunk, 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 plunk. And then he'd be coming flipping, flip.
Yeah, and keep flipping.
Then we'd go with the pans, hold them there, and he'd slap them on our pan, and away we go, and the lumberjacks take the hole.
Yes, I want to take, you'd put on about 4 or 5 on each plate that we'd bring back for refills. That way we always kept them coming hot. They were sourdough pancakes.
Oh, yeah.
They were good.
He used sourdough starter.
That's why he was. I don't know how he started it, but yeast, I think, when you go into
yes.
a camp.
Yes, right there. The way they do it. Save out a certain amount each time. And they mix up, and they always have some for the next morning.
Some cook says when the, you know, the dough keeps getting, hole is getting smaller in the pan, the old pot to keep the sourdough in keeps getting smaller and smaller. Then you have to cut out that, take it off and throw it away. Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh.
You know, you keep stirring, mm-hmm. putting the dough back in the same crock or whatever you use. And you stir your flour in there and your eggs, and then you pour it out into a big pan. And they were good hotcakes, so. I've tried to make some, but I'm not so good at it.
Takes experience, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever had biscuits in the morning. I don't think he ever did.
No.
Have those at night for dinner at sometimes. For, you nearly always have hot rolls for dinner because he baked bread. So nearly always that, buns.
Seemed like the biscuits them days were so good. I can't make biscuits like that.
Well, anything Albert makes is good. I don't care. He's the best cook.
I don't think he can make as good from the flour we get now. He had hard wheat and soft wheat. It's so much different.
Flour has something to do with it.
I used to make pretty good bread, but I can't make bread anymore.
Too many chemicals used now, maybe, in it.
They used to have separate wheat for the hard and soft and used for different things.
Hard wheat for the for bread and soft wheat for biscuits and cakes. Two different bins.
Did you use any other kind of flour at all? Cornmeal?
Oh yeah, they had cornmeal.
Oh yes, he'd make cornbread.
Yeah, cornbread.
Yeah, a certain time.
Whole wheat, made whole wheat bread too.
Yes, I think he did.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. Yeah, he could have that so they could have a choice.
We used to have two different kind of bread on the plate.
He made rye
dark
bread.
Dark bread. Yeah, rye.
That. Two or three kinds of cakes and usually two kinds of pies. Mm.
Did you make any of the food itself or did you?
Well, not so much. We were usually busy with our dining room work, but we'd ice cakes sometime if they got fried donuts. We'd help in that if they got a little bit pushed, you know, for help. If they have some days, it'd be more things to get out maybe than other times. I remember doing that, frying donuts, turning them. Big vat of grease they have on their frying lard they used. I think he used lard instead of shortening, didn't he?
For donuts?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And he used lard for their pie crust.
And he used some of the drippings too, I think, from beef, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fat when he cut up the beef. Use that tallow or whatever it is.
Oh.
Mix it.
Mix it with the lard.
Mm-hmm.
Those were delicious.
Would he get a whole side of beef and cut it up himself?
Oh, yeah. Well, he always cut his own meat.
That was an awful big heavy
job. He used to handle those hindquarters. I don't know.
He sure did. I don't know. He'd get it on his back and take it over on a great big block that they'd have, you know, and what they had the meat house. That was always a little place right next to the cook shack, and that'd be all screened in, keep it cool. Then he'd have to cut off the steaks and stews and roasts. Did all of that himself from the meat, so that took up a lot of time. And then they'd make their own hamburger. And then grind it with a hand grinder. That was a rough job too. or a bunch of lumberjacks.
He was telling about, I didn't know that, when he first started learning to cook. This Gert, what was his name? Wasn't him either. Some old cook, he said he'd tell him what to do and he'd sit in a chair.
Oh.
He'd sit in a chair and tell Albert what to do. So much of this and so much of that to make bread, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that's when he first started, he said. He was talking about it here the other morning. Gertcho, wasn't the name of that one cook that cooked?
Yeah.
He never liked a large crew. He was a section on the section gang.
Oh, he worked on that.
Remember him? He was a dandy cook, though, I guess. They said, or Albert said he was. Mm-hmm. Wonderful cook and so clean. Oh, he was neat. I think I went into his bunk, or his cookhouse one time. And you could eat off of that floor. Always kept things scrubbed, just like a pin. But he never had a big crew. He had about, I don't know how many they had on the section, about 40?
Yeah, that'd be about extent, I think, between 25 and 40. That'd be not too large.
He didn't push a big crew on him, he'd pull out.
That'd be quite a headache. They had to do a lot. We usually had to wash dishes too, and when we were in a smaller, you know, Camp 7, we washed dishes and did our dining room work, peeling the vegetables, kept the floors clean.
You remember when we had extra men come in on us and we crowded them?
Yeah, we had to, a lot of days it'd be stormy.
We crowded them in on this long table and they were growling, the other guys moved out. They had long benches, you know, and they were growling because they had to move down. But we didn't have room for them to sit any other place.
We sure didn't.
So we had to crowd them in and they wanted to eat.
And the center table full.
We had two long tables and a center table.
Mm-hmm. We had the train crews there. And this was a stormy day, though, when it was too stormy for them to go out to their work. They'd have to stay in. It was snowing so bad. And we'd have them all for lunch. Usually lunch would be a little bit light because they'd be out in the woods with their lunches.
Oh, like a bunch of chickens on the roost. Picking the other one's head.
Would that happen often that they couldn't go out to work?
Oh, once in a while.
They wouldn't get any pay then, would they?
No. No, that'd be...
They'd have to pay their board then. And I don't remember what it, I just wonder what they did come out with today, board and room.
What did you get when you started?
What did we get, May? Was
we got 60 a month. 60 board and room. 7 days a week. Day.
No time
you
off.
You didn't have any time off?
No.
Mm-mm. No. 7 day a week we put in.
Not even in the afternoon?
Oh yeah, we'd have maybe a hour or so in the afternoon.
Oh.
We worked all morning though, we usually.
Yeah, usually we were busy during the morning. Not very often we'd get
we had to peel a sack of onions. You know how that, we had a crying jag.
Oh yeah, and carrots.
Did you have any ways to get around that, that ever worked? And then, you know, to stop you from crying?
Oh, we'd
just cry.
We'd just cry.
Yeah, we didn't have any methods. And then we'd have French fries, so we also had to do those with a paring knife. Peel our potatoes and then cut it into French fries. And we'd have parsnips and carrots and rutabagas. Doing different vegetables, fresh vegetables that would be used. They didn't get canned carrots then. I think I ever did see any.
No.
You get canned string beans, but
string beans and peas, I guess.
And
tomatoes.
We'd want fried onions, maybe have fried onions and liver sometime or something like that. So that meant slicing the onions.
Some more cried.
Oh boy. We always had to pay peel a sack of potatoes, didn't we? Or a sack and a half?
Oh yeah. Didn't have a peeler either.
Oh no, we did that all hand peeling.
I mean like you own little peelers.
Paring got knife. Paring knife real sharp. And
time to whack her fingers.
Mm. I always wrap mine to keep from getting them cut. It was a lot of fun, though. I enjoyed that work very much in the logging camp. I liked the timber anyway.
What was
anyway.
Fun about it?
Well, it was hard work, but it was I liked it, though. It was
out in the woods, fresh air. In the afternoon, if we wanted to go for a walk, we could go for a walk or go down for a bunk and take a little nap. It was...
Sometimes we'd walk in the woods where they were logging, and, you know, it was walk the railroad track. It would be quite safe. Go up there and pull a cross-cut saw sometimes with some of the fellas we knew, you know, falling timbers. They thought that was pretty good.
Scalers. Used to call me Tiny Big Sweet.
Yeah.
Remember him? Paul Freeze. That was kind of hefty, I guess.
They used to call you what?
Tiny Big Sweet, he says. Oh, you ever come and call me that?
I don't know, you thought you was kind of a husky gal. I guess you were then, but you weren't later. You got rid of some of the weight.
I weighed around 150, I guess. 55, I don't know.
Somewhere around there.
What did you weigh one time? Wasn't you about 125 at one time?
Mm-hmm. On that company scale, I was about that. Of course, that was in fully clothed, you know, with the clothes we wore then. We wore quite... We had to dress quite warm. It was so cold. So,
would you have to reheat the cookhouses every morning, or would they be warm? You know, the
cookhouses.
Yeah.
Oh, the some mornings it wouldn't be too warm when you go in there because the fire hadn't been, especially in the dining room.
Fire wouldn't be kept going all night, but a fellow we called a bull cook, he'd kept the fires going. He'd be in quite early and get that big stove going. Always had it was kind of a long stove, not exactly a pot-belly stove, but it'd be a pretty long stove. I don't know, it'd be about from here against that wall, wouldn't it? That big one we had in one of the camps.
Yeah,
took up quite
so.
A bit of room, and they'd fill that full of wood and get it going, so it would heat up the dining room pretty well. Of course, the fellows sitting near the stove would get warmer than those way down to further end of the dining room.
Gus went up at Camp D when we worked up there. That was the coldest spot. Ooh, that was cold.
Was that ever cold? Yeah, many mornings I had to wear my galoshes to wait tables in. My feet would get so cold. Because they were on cars, you know, they were movable cars. They were on wheels. And they'd be up off the ground. Quite a ways and nothing underneath, so that coat would come up around all around under the floors. Boy, it would be cool. You'd start to warm up much around noon. I bet it was 35 and 40 below up there.
Oh yeah, it must have been. Gosh.
Snow was deep. Snow, some days was snow 2 or 3 days at a stretch. Just keep piling up. Yeah, it wasn't too easy, yes.
Did you keep working in, you did keep working some, didn't you?
Yeah.
After you were married?
Yeah, I did. I worked off and on, relieving somebody or something like that.
It wasn't steady.
No. No, I had Biddy to take care of then.
Where did she go to school?
Well, we moved to Beauville. After she had to go, she went to school up here, her grandmother, for maybe about a month. It didn't prove out, so I moved to Beauville and got a house there. So she starts school. She graduated from Beauville and then went to University of Idaho. graduated 42.
Yeah, I guess so. She graduated from U of I in 47. Spring of 47.
47. Oh, we moved up. 42 is when we, I guess, moved up here. And then she taught 1 year in Lewiston, and then she got married. 15th of. Married 25 years last year. 26 years she had been married now.
This year. Yeah. It seemed quite possible.
When you lived in Beauville, was your, would your husband come in on, you know, on weekends at all?
They got so they could come in about every other week.
Every other week? Mm-hmm. You mean they'd work out a week and then?
Yeah, and then, like Ralph Hansen, he'd take over one weekend and then it'd switch. Mm-hmm. So that's how he got in. Of course, when he got to be alone in the camp, then he had to stay there all the time. And Betty and I'd take a trip to camp, maybe stay over, something like that.
In the winter, though, I bet you couldn't, could you? And you couldn't get back there and drive.
Well, I did drive to, I can't remember what camp, Camp 6, I think it was, and another camp that was quite a ways out. And I can remember the snow was so high on you wouldn't get off the road anyway. Squeaky snow, you know, that had been plowed. Mm-hmm. We'd go out there maybe on and just go out for the day, like on Sunday or something like that. Now I've driven to Elk River. Well, you know, I rode from Beauville to Camp D and to C, Camp C. And then we'd have to walk from Camp C up to old camp, our new Camp D.
Mm-hmm.
That was about a mile and a half, I guess, something like that. I walked a railroad track. That was kind of a hard job because 1 year I was sick. And I drove the car for another lady, and God, I could hardly make it up there. I don't know, I had to. Chronic pneumonia or some darn thing. It's terrible. I was so weak.
I bet you had virus pneumonia.
I don't know. I couldn't even stand the smell of the food. I had to get out of the kitchen.
Oh my goodness.
I just couldn't stand it. Huh? So I went over to Albert's bunkhouse and laid down until we got ready to go home. Then I decided I better go to the doctor. My lungs were all filled up with mucus. It just, Dr. Wilson. And he's in a rest home now. He's a good doctor. I went to see him, and I don't think he remembered me, but he sure was a nice guy. When Mother was sick, he'd come and see her, you know, come to Bowl and remember me.
I guess sure I do. He came up, give her an examination and check over, and
very, very nice.
Hard to beat.
Albert sure gave him a little
notice. He's giving him a good.
I think he's going to have the best one.
My problem is that we talked so much last time and I asked you most to.
Alfred, I think, done all right though. I think his was good.
Yeah,
brother.
Hmm?
I think our brother was done real good.
Mm-hmm. There are some real good stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How long did that, when you lived in Beauville, was that, did you encourage your husband to quit?
No, he just, got tired out. They were riding him too much. Made him, oh, it just seemed like he was pushing the work on him too much. He was up at Clarkie up there is when he quit up there.
Oh.
That's when he came to Spokane. And
oh, yes. They
boarded with you guys up here, you know? Yeah, they had, I don't know how many. He had 300 and some men. And they were just pushing the work on him. He said, wouldn't give him the help. So he got mad one day and told him he's quit. So he came home, was home a while, and then he thought he'd come up here and he worked for the aluminum. Wasn't it the aluminum?
Seemed like he worked
out
of Niagara for a while. He was, the war was starting then, you know, and he got in on that.
Cooked for the CC boys. That was, and then the WPA?
Yeah, WPA, but he worked for those CC boys, so didn't he, most? He had a large crew of those.
Cooked for
boys
them.
Boys from the east and all around it were from the big cities. Mm. They had them out there working in the...
Well, I was going to tell you about when he got sick and I came up after him, why I brought him home and he got over it. First thing he did, he got a call from the potlatch to come back to cooking again. Remember, he went up to Elk River.
Oh, yes.
And he cooked. They had a camp out of Elk River there. So I took him up there, and he decided, well, he'd go back to work. It was a small crew. So he went up there and worked for the potlatch again, for old Axel Anderson. And he worked there, and then we heard that Mrs. Watts wanted to sell her restaurants. And Mr. Watts got killed on automobile accident. So he came in and we saw about that, so we bought the restaurant in Bowell and run that for about pretty near a year. And we sold out, it was too rough. Too many hours, gosh, that was awful.
Yeah, that was a pretty hard go, I guess.
Of course, if we'd have had the tavern, that's which I wanted to buy as a tavern in connection with the restaurant. I knew I could handle the tavern if he'd handle the restaurant, but he didn't want anything to do with the drunks, so I thought, well, I could handle them things, I think. Throw them out on the ear or something.
Were the lumberjacks often drunk in the camps?
No, they'd go out on a bender and then come back. What'd they say?
They didn't allow drinking in camp.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, our boss up there, May Melker, he...
Oh, yes.
I used to cut his hair. Poor guy. He was a nice guy, though. But he'd like his nips, I guess, and he had a little too much one time. He wanted a haircut. I'd done barbering in his camp. Here he was sitting and he was getting down further and I'd have to pull him up. He was working down. I still do a little barbering now. For the people that can't get out, you know. I guess May barbers her husband's hair.
He won't go to a barber shop. I cut his hair. I used to cut my son's hair till he went east to college, so he never went to a barber shop.
Well, Albert didn't go to a barber shop until I was working. Waitress work down here that I did was on Susie.
Oh.
That windblown.
Yeah.
You know what they used to wear? It's just perfect. I don't know how I did it now. You wouldn't know what a windblown was like, but it's shorter up here and it kind of fluffed around. She wanted the windblown haircut, and I said, well, I'll try it. It was just came out perfect. Of course, she had a lot of hair to work with, you know, like you have.
Yes.
You got a lot of hair.
It's easier when you have a lot.
Her hair thick, though, May. I was
beautiful hair. My goodness.
Take that.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Would a lot of the Jacks just let their hair grow long in the winter?
No, they'd go out, they'd get a haircut, get a little long, but Sometimes they'd go out. I didn't have all the law. I just had the boss and Albert and maybe the...
Some of the kitchen crew, I guess.
Kitchen crew. And then I had, what's Orville?
Yeah, Orville Meyer.
Oh, yeah, I used to cut his hair. Kind of like my haircut, I guess. But it wasn't much money in it. I couldn't charge because I didn't have a license. So they'd give me donation. You know, they just... Then when I moved, when we moved to Beauville, during the Depression, I had quite a few up there. I'd even fix the women's hair. Give them finger waves. Them days. You know what a finger wave is? Well, they put the waves in by, just like Marcel.
Oh, you mean just...
We didn't do pin curls them days. You use the comb, pull your hair this way and then put it down here and then bring it back this way and it'd be regular waves.
That's
used to go. And then I'd cut their hair, shape it. I'd get eggs for it. Guilfoy was one of them, his wife, or his kids. You know, his boy, he used to come over there with her haircut all the time.
Oh.
Yeah, that youngest one. She'd bring me eggs.
Oh.
And Morris Holland and Bob Holland and Mr. Holland. He even mentioned it to this day when I see him. He says,
oh. Is that Joe Holland?
Joe Holland. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to cut his hair. There wasn't a barber in town. But what kind of gets you, though, when the barber came into town, why I didn't do any much haircuts. I didn't do any haircuts after that, only a few, you know, that stayed with me. A barber came in and they got a job, see? Even Tarbox remembers that.
Oh.
I saw Walt Tarbox. We had a bunch of railroad guys come in the morning. This was in the evening. And it was a lady here, and I wouldn't call her a lady, some biddy anyway. I don't care if she wanted to hear it or not. Anyway, she brought her dog in there, and I had to sign up as no dogs allowed in the restaurant. She brought her dog in there, and so she took some stuff and fit him on the floor, and you know, grease and stuff like that. It just was too much scrubbing that big floor. Have you ever been in that restaurant? Well, it's about the same way it was when we were there. So I said to her, I said, I had the tables all set up and a bunch of men was on that side, and here she was. I said to her, I says, you know there's no dogs allowed in this restaurant. I said, there's a sign out there.